This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. We've got a bit of a technical issue here this morning. I'm just having some problems because I cannot hear myself through the headphones. But now I'm in the mix, so here we go. Welcome. Not a full studio. Well, nearly a full studio today. Fazana in the house. How are you, Faz?
Good, thanks, Anita.
Good, thanks. Martin, how are you doing?
Good morning, Ty. Nice to be back.
Yeah, good. Good to have you back in the studio. And good morning to you, George.
How's it, Ty?
How are you doing?
Good, and you?
Yep, fantastic. Thank you very much. You guys can obviously follow us on, Auto Trader on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And obviously, check out most of the things we're going to cover today on our news and review sections on our website. And I think to kick off, I think the most important thing to discuss first thing this morning is the 2019 SA Car of the Year and the Auto Trader SA Car of the Year. And I think, you know, as a brand, we're extremely proud to be a part of this prestigious event. I think the event has been running for 33 odd years, and we are now the title sponsors of that. And last week, the announcement went out of the eligible vehicles for the 2019 Auto Trader SA Car of the Year. And I think it's a good place to kick off the show this morning, and let's dive into the list. And Martin and Fazana, as petrol heads, and George as yourself as well, let's just have a look, see who has.
I don't know if I'm a petrol head. I love cars.
Love cars, yes.
Not a petrol head like Martin is. But I suppose you could call me an industry head. Instead of like, not head as in like the head of the body, but passionate about the automotive industry in South Africa.
Well, I mean, you call me a petrol head because I have petrol in my veins, so we'll call you an electron head.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love electric cars, but I suppose that's secondary to this industry, right?
Or the other buzzword in the industry is an enthusiast.
Enthusiast. Sounds a bit watered down from my passion.
There we go. It's funny though, because I mean, I've never been a car person, but I got excited when I saw the list of vehicles that have come out.
And nah, the car person just didn't come out of you yet.
Hasn't come out of me yet. No, it's in you. I promise you now. It really is. I mean, there are some cars that drive past and I'm like, holy crap, what was that? That really sounded good. It looked good. It smelled good. And I get it. I do. I appreciate cars. I think where I kind of take a step back is I'm not knowledgeable about vehicles. So I don't know the ins and outs. Do I like it? Yes. Does it look good? Yes. Can I get excited about it? Absolutely. Do I know anything about it? Absolutely not. But I suppose that's... I've learned a hell of a lot in my 3 years at Auto Trader.
No, I wouldn't worry too much.
No,
about
I'm not
that.
Too worried. But
I'm not as, that's why Martin's here. He knows the technicalities, ins and outs.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost every make, model, and variant under the planet.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Martin will agree, as we go on year by year, there's still more and more to learn.
Yep.
Well, you never stop learning.
You never stop
learning.
Because
cars are always evolving, right? Yeah. So there's always a new technology. I mean, you're going to become a techno head in, let's call it 5 years. You'll be driving electric. This remains to be seen. But let's get straight into it. So there are 31 vehicles that are eligible for the Car of the Year 2019. And we're going to just go through these in alphabetical order. And the first vehicle that comes up is the Alfa Romeo Stelvio. Which is
a brilliant car.
Absolutely brilliant car. Is there anything else you want to add about that? I've got a little blurb for each one. So this is Alfa's first SUV. It's also rated as one of the most dynamic accomplished SUVs on the market, and this is thanks to the north-south, the longitudinal engine installation. Can you unpack that for me a little bit? What is that all about?
That basically means in the default mode it runs as a rear-wheel drive car.
Okay.
Until such time as it detects a slip at the back, some tire slip at the back, or the dynamic controls decide that there's some more power needed to balance the thing at the front.
And it will kick in automatically.
And then it automatically just shuffles power between the front and the rear.
Okay.
But it really, really is extremely, it's most likely the best driving SUV out there.
Sure.
Of them all.
Yeah.
At the moment.
So obviously, I think all of these cars obviously have a chance.
And then it's pretty.
And it's pretty.
And it's pretty quick as well. and it's very spacious. So, I mean, the Stelvio has a lot going for it.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Well, let's look at the second vehicle that's in the lineup, and that's the Aston Martin, the Vantage. For Zana, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, a good thing. Okay. That car is stunning.
Is it really, you like it a lot?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I see the new Vantage replaces the entry-level Aston that was in production for 12 years. It employs the excellent, it's got a Mercedes-AMG twin-turbo V8 engine and a rear-mounted ZF automatic gearbox.
Yeah. So we know that one's going to go like stink as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I suppose that's Aston Martin for you, isn't it?
And also, an Aston Martin isn't a car with which to arrive. It's a car to arrive when you want to signal that you've arrived a long time ago.
The blazing chariots and trumpets and horns and stuff, exactly. All right, let's know. Next vehicle is the Haval H9, and I think this car has taken South Africa by surprise. I mean, we reviewed it 2 weeks ago, and you guys had only good things to say about it. So Haval really, really, you know, I think I might be mistaken, but this is obviously the first time they'll be involved in a competition.
I think when the jurors get these cars to test, and on the test days as well, they will also be pretty much blown away.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's two Hondas in the running here, and that's the Honda Amaze and then the Honda Civic Type R, which I've heard a lot of good
I drove the Type R at launch, and I loved it. I just couldn't live with it myself because I'm not 22 years old anymore.
Okay, all right.
The Amaze, I've heard good things. I've never driven that one, so maybe someone else can fill in on that.
Yeah, a bit of an entry-level sedan there. I don't know too much about the Amaze. But I mean, this is the thing. You know, these vehicles have now been put out to, you know, they're still going to go through testing. There's semi-finalists that have to be selected. So let's just carry on running through the list quickly. Hyundai, in the Hyundai stable, they've got the Grand i10 and the Kona. Those are two vehicles that have been put forward from Hyundai.
Yeah, I drove the Kona about 2 weeks ago. Okay. Very, very impressive little car. And I think it should do well in our market.
Fantastic. And then from the British stable, Jaguar, the E-Pace.
Pretty.
You like that, huh? Okay, fantastic. And then obviously from the same stable, the Range Rover Velar.
Very pretty.
Well, it does. I mean, and that's a very, very high-tech. I know it offers some really high-tech features.
Oh, yes.
And is also one of the best-looking models that Range Rover have ever produced. Let's just kind of run through this quickly. Then they're from Lexus, the LS, and then the RXL.
Yeah, the long wheelbase one.
Okay.
Or the extended one.
Okay. Then we've got the Maserati, the Levante.
Ooh, the best Lexus you left out, the ES.
Oh, the ES. Sorry, my bad.
That's actually, I think that car should be in the running to be a finalist.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see how good you are at determining these kind of things. Right. Then from Mercedes-Benz, there's
don't worry. That Levante, if I was going to vote a million times, it would be that car.
Would it really?
Yeah, you like it that much?
That car. You know what? Maserati. I'm an Aston Martin fan.
Okay.
But over the last couple of years, Maserati has started to kind of, you know, etch its way into my slot for the Aston Martin. Because for years I've been an Aston Martin fan. Not that my favorite car on the planet is, what is it, Ty? The Porsche 911.
The Tesla Model S.
Well, yes, when it comes to cars that are actually in the country, not. But worldwide, yes, absolutely. Tesla, you know, nothing will ever beat Tesla Model S with Ludacris. But that's not on this list. The Maserati Levante is an amazing car.
That's the one that you did that interview and you drove with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's up there for me with the Aston Martin.
All right, fantastic. Then from Mercedes-Benz, the A-Class and the X-Class.
Yeah, the A-Class I actually spent some time with.
Well, we're going to be reviewing that later. It looks like a phenomenal vehicle as well. Really nice car.
Really nice car.
Yeah. Our listeners can't see you nodding your head. Just remember that. Then from Mitsubishi, there's the Pajero Sport, also a solid car.
I welcome this one's inclusion.
Absolutely.
I think this is a very relevant car
for
our audience and for the general public out there.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like a Fortuner wannabe.
No, it's a Fortuner done, but done better.
Done better.
Yeah.
Yeah. don't know.
Okay, right. Nissan, the Nissan Micra from the Nissan stable, and then from Opel, the Crossland X and the Grandland X. Porsche are in the competition, and they're running again with the Cayenne. Renault have got the Duster, the Kwid, and the Megane RS. And then from Suzuki, there's three models. There's the Desire, the Jimny, and the Swift. I think the Jimny could be a vehicle that's going to, I don't know. There was just so much hype about it when it was launched, and I think it really is going to do a good job.
I think it's a wonderful little vehicle. Or yeah. It's bound to be a wonderful little vehicle when we get to drive it.
Yes.
But I think it's too focused.
Too focused.
Yeah.
So not enough.
Its appeal is basically centered around a very hardcore group of people.
Okay.
And then there'd be the fringes who'd buy it because it looked good.
You know, you say this though. So I've got a mate who said, you know, he wants to buy one. He'll drive it for the next couple of years. And it's something that he'd give to his son when he turns 18, yeah. Which is in 6 years' time. And the thinking behind that kind of got me thinking, like, that makes sense. I mean, I think as an 18-year-old, what a lack of car to get for your...
Yeah, if you're a surfer in Durban, I guess.
No, I mean, if you like rock climbing in Johannesburg, I think...
I suppose. It depends on your thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. I think for a young outdoorsy kind of person, I think that's a good way to go. I think the only issue that I had with that was boot space. Like, there's not a lot of room in the boot for bags and stuff like that. From Toyota, you got the Ego and the Yaris, and then Volvo, obviously in the running with the XC40 and the XC60.
Both excellent
vehicles, yeah. Absolutely. And also, I mean, the 2018 World Car of the Year title holder was the Volvo XC60. So I'm assuming that's
what I was going to say. This XC60, I watch this space. That car is
phenomenal.
Yeah.
This might be Volvo's second Car of the Year winner.
You reckon? I mean, yeah, I think, you know, out of the vehicles that I've seen, I mean, I don't know why, but Volvo are just, I don't know, year after year, they're producing great
vehicles.
They're
on a roll.
They are on a roll. They really, really are. So so that's the story. But I think something that's even more exciting about the 2019 edition of Car of the Year is that we've created a platform where consumers can actually have a voice. And if you log on to autotraderkoti.co.za, you can cast your vote out of the 31 qualifying vehicles, let's call them that. You can select your top 20 as people who are interested in the competition. And we'd really like to hear, you know, what our consumers and what our users think about the vehicles that have been put forward. I think it's nice that there is an element of from the consumer, because ultimately the consumer votes at the end of the day with their wallet, don't they, George?
Yeah, I mean... even if that wallet is got from the bank.
Absolutely.
They do vote from their wallet.
Yeah, they do vote with their wallet. So that's really nice. And voting is open. I think voting ends on Monday, the 5th of November, is when we will close voting to the public. And we'd really like to see what you people have to say. So log on to autotraderkoti.co.za and cast your vote. It's a really simple process, couple of tick boxes, and away you go. So that's Car of the Year. And then I think, what is the process from here, Martin? So we've got the 31 eligible vehicles. Top 20 are then selected as semi-finalists. Those vehicles then go through to a few rounds of some really, really heavy testing, don't they?
Well, yes, and then they get voted for by the guild.
By the guild, yes.
Yeah.
So
then whittles it down to the list of finalists.
List of finalists, and that's 10 ultimately, right? Mm. And then those 10 are put through their paces, and a winner then is announced. At the end of quarter one next year. So that's pretty much how the competition runs. And I think something that we need to, I think if there's anybody out there that's going, but how can you compare an XC60 to a Yaris? These vehicles are all judged compared to the cars that they compete with in their own relative classes. And it's quite scientific. It is extremely technical. This is not just a case of, let me just. I like that one.
It's definitely not a popularity contest.
No, it's not.
There's a lot
like
of competitions out there that are popularity contests.
Yep.
This is not a popularity contest. This is a pageant with some science.
Absolutely. This is C for serious. It really is. There is
even if they've got petrol engines.
Exactly.
It's still science.
Yeah.
And then the consumer's involved. So, absolutely. You know, and therein lies, you know, probably some of the popularity. Yeah. So, yep. You know, I think this particular competition in the country, being the longest and oldest and most prestigious car of the year that is modeled on international car of the years, you know, has now taken one step forward.
Yep.
And become, you know, a serious competition in the country involving everybody. The professionals, yeah. The technology, the consumer. You know, I think this is the start of something huge.
Absolutely. And I think the positive is, I mean, you know, if you think about it, we switched the site on Friday morning. We know that people are out and about on the weekends and stuff. Our biggest traffic happens during the week, but we've had just short of 400 votes already, and that just goes to show that consumers want to get involved. They want to be part of these competitions,
and that's why it's important to get the consumers involved.
Absolutely. And I think if we can say this, the voting from the consumer is really to get an opinion from the consumer. That vote and those, you know, whatever that is voted for does count towards the selection of the top 20, but it's not enough to, you know, to swing it or
well,
to
I
throw
don't
out
I don't think there's any one judge that has enough
sway
over the competition. So,
absolutely.
So I suppose that's the principle.
Absolutely.
You know, the consumer's involvement is not a popularity contest.
No.
So therefore, there's not enough sway in the consumer vote to swing the competition.
Absolutely.
But in saying that, there's not enough sway in any one judge to swing the competition either. So it's a fair, scientific voting process that includes the consumer, which is the popularity bit.
Absolutely.
And if you want to, you know, tweet us, Facebook us, message us with your science behind why you think you voted for what you
then
voted for.
Then by all means,
go for it. We'll have fun.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, our social media team are on standby all the time. And if you've got anything to say or anything that you'd like to add, give us a shout out, tweet, Facebook, Instagram. Well, that's just images, but get in hold. So, I mean, I'm really, really looking forward to the competition. I'm going to say this year, but for 2019, this year and next year, and we'll keep you posted. I think, you know, that we're going to get some of the judges in here. We're going to be talking about it quite a bit, and I think, you know, as Auto Central, we want to get to the, you know, nuts and bolts of the competition and understand why it's the longest running and most prestigious car awards in the country. So fantastic, and hats off to everybody that has voted, and thank you very much for that. On your last 100 rand and you're worried about fuel price, here's how far the most popular fuel sipping cars will take you. And we're not going to spend too much time on this, but I've felt the pinch. I won't lie to you. You know, it's not a case of going to the garage and going, hey, fill it up, please. It's now, can you just give me 200 bucks, 95, thanks very much. Because
calculating
where you're going and what you think you're going to need, because, you know, it's... it's becoming expensive out there.
You don't drive for fun anymore.
You can't afford to drive for fun anymore. It's really, really. Anyway, this is not it's not all doom and gloom, but for those of you who are petrol conscious or considering buying, vehicles that are, you know, if you're buying a vehicle purely based on how far will it get me, there was some research done, and the question was, how far will 100 take you? And there are five cars that will actually take you quite far for 100 bucks. And we'll start at the bottom. The Ford Figo has got a it will take you 105 kilometers on 100 rand, which is, that's pretty decent. The 2018 Datsun Go will take you 118 kilometers. The Suzuki Swift will take you 121 kilometers. The VW Polo will take you 131 k's. But if you want to get those 4 k's further, then the Renault Kwid will take you 134 kilometers on 100 bucks.
Just remember that these numbers are calculated based on the manufacturer's fuel consumption claims.
Not
necessarily
not
what
driving,
you'd see in real life. The only ones I could actually really see getting close to those figures are the Go and the Kwid. And the Swift as well.
What about the Polo? I mean, they're pretty
very good,
efficient.
But they're nowhere near the 4.7 litres per 100.
You reckon a little bit over, like 5.5 maybe?
Yeah, closer to 5.5.
Yeah, somewhere around there. But I thought that was interesting that you can tell that times are getting tough, because there are guys who are going, listen, how far can I get on 100 rand? And I tell you, the way to do it is to get a scooter. Because then you'll get much further.
Well, or a Kwid.
or a Quid.
But you know, I had the Renault Duster on test about a week or two ago, and I just drove and drove and drove, and it was a diesel, 1.5 liter.
Oh yes, those things go forever.
And the needle, yeah, the needle would barely move. I drove the whole week, and by the end of the week, it was sitting just above half, and I do a lot of distance.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, but I wish my car did that. I kind of feel like I get in and I just wait for that ping, ping, and then you know, you see the little petrol light go on.
Seen it irritating at all.
Then the gauge goes to completely flat. There's no more like blue line saying you got petrol, and I still know I can do 50 kilometers. And I take my odo reading and I drive for those 50
kilometers. Relax, Brew, I know my car.
Here we go, 100%. All right.
Well, I don't think that's going to beat a hybrid. Which is going to cost you exactly 2 liters of fuel to do 100 kilometers on average. Wow. So what is a liter of fuel now? What, 17? Yeah. Don't come with your let me finish first.
Yeah, the Range Rover is still in the garage. just
hold on. Hold on. Don't, you know, he wants to talk about petrol shit. So most hybrids are, you know, in the range of about 1 to 2 liters of fuel per 100 kilometers. So what does 1 liter of fuel now cost?
Can we
19,
work on
18?
I think it's 17.
17?
Yeah.
17 rand per liter. So you're going to pay roughly about, what, 34 rand?
34 rand for 2 liters.
For 100 kilometers worth of driving. So consider a hybrid.
Absolutely.
Hybrids will get you much further.
Yeah.
With
okay, now you can say
proviso,
what you want to say.
You need to be confined to urban traffic. The moment you take a hybrid on the freeway, its advantage disappears completely.
But that's all right, because then you'll just get what other cars get.
Well,
so, you know, you're losing nothing. The opportunity cost is negligible.
Why do you lose? What do you lose on the highway?
That 1 to 2 liters per 100 claim is very unrealistic.
Double it if you want to.
No.
Make it, sure, make it okay, 68 yes, rand.
It's still cheaper.
68 rand to travel 100 k's.
The only car where I've actually ever achieved sub 2 liters per 100 was in a Prius.
And Daniel.
That was in bumper to bumper traffic for all the way from Sandton to Pretoria. And that's why. But then the next time I took it out to Colonnade, this is about the 30k trip on the freeway.
And you got about 10.
And I got about 10.
10, yeah. So 10 is kind of normal. And the reason, Ty, is because the hybrids have to keep that high speed above 100 k's an hour.
Yep.
The drag on the car from the air means that it has to the electric motor hasn't got enough power to keep that going, so it has to switch to the petrol motor.
Okay.
Or if the battery runs down as well. Then you need some form of energy provision, and that would then come from the petrol engine.
But all in all, I mean, if you were doing 10 litres to 100 k's, which is at 17, call it 18 rand, that's 180 rand.
Bucks,
even if you did 50% of your driving in urban conditions at double it for Martin's purposes, 68 rand.
Yeah.
So if you just halved the two at 30 plus 180, which is, you know, you're going to be paying like just over 100 rand to drive 100 kilometres. On average,
Well, in the Volvo XC90 D8, the hybrid one, there were days where I did not use a single drop of petrol.
Jeez, like, what a pleasure.
I plugged it in overnight, get in the car, and then I have like 40 k's, and for a short commute, that's more than enough,
provided
you don't need any serious power. It takes 7 hours to get to that 40 kilometer point again.
Yeah.
From a normal 220 mains point, but each recharge there would cost me about $22.
Lekker.
Well, you see, I mean, that's the way to go. I mean, that would get me to work and back probably 3 days of the week.
Trump your scooter.
It actually does. It does. The only thing that you can't trump on a scooter is that, you know, you
freedom.
Just, yeah, freedom and
mobility.
You don't, traffic is
the
not
fact
a,
that you
traffic,
keep moving.
Traffic is not a factor at all. Mm. I found some really, really interesting world driving records last week. So I don't know if you guys have opened the link, but let me just shoot these off at you. Martin, do you have any idea what the longest car journey in a single country has been?
No.
George, any idea?
Longest car journey in a single country.
The longest journey by car in a single country. And it was achieved by, it doesn't matter who they are, but yeah, I just want to get what do you think the kilometer distance was? Faza? Sorry.
Kilometer-wise, I'm not sure, but I would have to say I think it's in the States.
Well, I mean, it has to be in a big continent, so Russia or the States. Yeah. I would imagine, and so I would imagine it's Russia or the States.
Probably the States, judging by the names of the people here.
Okay, yeah. So 5, probably the States. If I had to take South Africa, you know, top of Nelspruit, you know, near the border to Cape Town, it's probably about 2,000 k.
Well, 2,400 if you go via Bloem, then left to the Garden Route, and then you drive.
Okay, so you can do that. So 2,400.
Yeah.
So single trip in South Africa would be 2,400. If you take our landmass, it's pretty big. And you then juxtapose that against the States, I'd say maybe 5,000 k's.
This number is huge. It's 58,135 kilometers. Yeah, it was the longest journey by car in a single country. So these oaks obviously did some kind of massive road trip that clocked up some kilometers. The highest number of countries ever visited by car was between 1999 and 2002. These people covered more than 245,000 kilometers. They visited 111 countries in their vehicle. I mean, that must just be absolutely amazing.
That must have been Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
must have been Europe, because how do you?
Well, you say that there was that lady that drove from here, from, and she drove to London. So
about the country. She didn't need 3 years to do that.
No, she did it in a year. Yeah. So I mean, you know, but that's still quite high. The most countries visited by electric car on a single charge. Seven.
Look at these Georges hit the ground.
I know exactly where that was there.
By Frederik van Oorloop in a Tesla Model S.
Yeah.
So it must have, that must have it's been in Europe.
It's in that corner where Germany and Italy and France and Spain and everybody gets together.
And he just did a hot loop, huh? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, done. Yeah. The world's longest car. Can you guess how long that is? World's longest car.
Well, I just need to guess. I
have got it in front of you. So anyway, let me cut out the bag. 30 meters with 26 wheels, 2 engines, and it needs 2 drivers.
Wow.
It's obviously a limo, and you can see it's American because it's got the Star Spangled Banner all over it.
That would be the one with the jacuzzi in the back.
Does it have a jacuzzi in the back?
Probably, yeah.
Jeez, luck. Okay. And then the tightest parallel park. I mean, can you imagine? So take in, it doesn't matter what car it is. If you added 7.5 centimeters on the front of your bumper, and if you imagine your car with 7.5 centimeters, you obviously divide that by 2 because you need space at the back and space at the front. That is the world's tightest parallel park.
How many turns did he do?
It doesn't say.
I think he might have used some speed and a handbrake.
I know, because I've actually seen this on the Guinness World Records. That guy actually comes in and he does. He does a handbrake turn into parallel parking. Park into the parking. Yeah. I mean, 7.5 centimeters. I mean, that's insane. So I thought those were quite fascinating. Not that I'm prepared to try any of them. Unless somebody else wants to pay for that, but
the damage to the cars in front and back, and yours.
Well, not just that. Even driving around the universe, it'll be awesome. I see Uber launches a safety toolkit for riders and drivers, and I think this is a long time coming. We know that Uber have had some issues. There's been, you know, there were quite a bit of crime. I think that's just the nature of the game. But Uber is rolling out a safety toolkit for riders and drivers across 38 countries, and that includes South Africa. So over the next few weeks, it'll be rolled out to the millions of riders, drivers, and delivery partners using the app. The toolkit features include an emergency button, which allows you to connect directly to a private emergency service and security response when needed. And this is obviously provided by a third-party private security supplier. Then you get your trusted contacts, which enables riders to, you know, designate 5 numbers that if you're in an emergency, you can push a button and it will alert those 5 people, which I think is really, really cool. And then people are called trusted contacts. And then there's a safety center, which helps you find information on some of the key safety tools in the app. So hats off for Uber for coming up with some preventative safety measures to help people who are using their
I think this will go app. Quite a way towards calming the fears of, well, for instance, the elderly. My old folks refuse to use an Uber. They really shouldn't be driving anymore, but they don't want to Uber because they just don't trust getting into a car with a stranger.
Yeah, but that's the demographic, huh?
Yeah.
It's, you know, I would imagine that older people, you know, I'm using a general reference now because it's probably not everybody, but, you know, they didn't grow up with getting into cars with strangers.
Yep. Yeah.
So to get over that mind block must be quite something.
I mean, but back in the day, if they needed a lift, they probably would have hitchhiked.
No.
My best mate's parents met each other because he picked up a hitchhiker,
yeah,
his wife, at the time.
Wow.
How's that?
In 1998, they said, don't get into a car with strangers. In 2008, they said, don't meet strangers on the internet. Now it's 2018, where you go on the internet to meet a stranger, where you get on the internet to use an app to call a stranger so you can get into a car with them.
It's funny how the world turns. And yes, our last piece here in the catch-up this morning is no more walk-ins at Gauteng driving license centres. So with close to 50% of driving license application bookings being made online, Gauteng will cease walk-in bookings at its driving license test centres with effect from the 1st of November. And this is obviously an announcement that's been made by the Road Traffic Management Corporation. So out of the 108,554 people who submitted applications last week, 48,000 used the online booking system instead of waiting in long queues. And I think this is really, really nice. The fact that you can, A, you can go online and you can register when you want to do your driver's license, you know, at what station you'd like to do your test at. And it's all been facilitated online. And this is obviously a system that is working.
I think it's about time.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, why go and sit and stand in queues for hours and hours when you can, you know, hop online and book your learner's or your driver's license? And I see that there's another part to this, and that I think you can actually renew your driver's license now online as well, which is phenomenal, well, because there's nothing worse than sitting in those queues. I mean, that's
they say 180 minute wait.
Yes, roughly.
Just to get an appointment.
Yeah. So I mean, that's 3 hours of just sitting, doing, you know,
squat,
nothing. And it's not like there's entertainment in those
meet
places
interesting
either.
People next to you.
Yeah.
Get mugged.
I don't know about that. Anyway, let's get into our F1. And well, it's pretty much done and dusted. Hey, George, I see Lewis Hamilton obviously had to finish within the top 7 positions, and I think he finished 4th overall. I don't know if did you manage to catch the
last night? Late, but I managed to watch it. But you know, good on him. I think I think it was inevitable for him to win. He had to get 5 points in order to get those 5 points. He needed to finish 5th.
Yeah.
He did, and now the championship's his. I don't think. So this is my take on F1 this year. I don't think Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes won their championship. I think Ferrari and Vettel lost it. Yeah. That's what I think happened. Yeah. It was in their hands. It was theirs to lose, and they lost it. They could have been the world champion. Good for Mercedes and Hamilton. They kept their guns. They kept their strategy squeaky clean. Ferrari were the ones who made the mistakes, and they had the ability.
Absolutely. I mean, this goes down to show you how important the team behind the scenes is. Yeah. It's not just about the driver, but it's about everything that happens as well. Yeah. I mean,
look at the floor. So they had Ferrari had a floor up to Baku, I think it was, under floor of the car. Okay. Which now, if you look at the floor of these Formula One cars, they're like upside down aeroplane wings. Okay, so if you imagine an aeroplane wing, that what causes the lift on an aeroplane wing is the top side of the wing pulls the aeroplane into the sky.
Okay.
It's not necessarily all floating on air. It's actually being sucked into the air because of the pressures that are on top of the wing. Now, they turn that upside down. They put it on the bottom of the Formula One car, and then it causes suction into the ground. So they replace this floor thinking that it's going to be faster because there's going to be more downforce, more suction onto the ground. Between then and the last race in the US, just before the last race in the US, they decided to switch the floor back to the old one, and the car's faster again. So they lost all those races
because of that.
Because of the floor.
Sherbert.
Talk about the fatal flaw.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. But I mean, they don't just do this. Surely there's testing, and they would have put those things into wind tunnels and all that kind of stuff.
But the problem is, in real life situation, you can't replicate the density, altitude. You can't replicate the
heat,
humidity.
You don't know what it's going to be like. The wind,
the influence of the vehicles around you.
Yeah.
Yes, you can't replicate that stuff unless you're in real race conditions.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you see a sliver of failure, switch back very quickly, make sure, or put your second car on the new floor and not the leading car
and compare
the two. You know, like, why change the entire bloody world lose a couple of races, it's theirs. It was theirs to lose, and they lost it.
So do you think Ferrari are going to come back swinging next year?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. It's not going to be a walk in the park. I don't think that constructor's going to lie down.
Yeah. I mean, I caught the highlights this morning. I couldn't believe Hamilton's speed off the line at the start yesterday.
Unbelievable.
He just got a good pull away.
That wasn't a pull away. That was a launch.
Yeah, he launched it properly.
No wheel spin. He probably launched.
Just gone. Yeah.
I mean,
but still, kudos.
Vettel drove a freaking fantastic race.
Yeah.
A very good race.
Yeah.
And their strategy was on point. They did all the right things yesterday, but it's a little too little too late.
Very well to Red Bull for their lockdown on...
Yes, on one and two.
Yeah.
Is it the first time they've done it? Was the second time they've done that, a contract call?
Well, I think this season, yes.
Yeah, this season's
the first time they had a front row lockout.
Yeah. And then well done to Crash for stopping. For not crashing.
Oh, you know what? I must take my hat off to him for not crashing into Hamilton at the beginning. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very mature about it. And right at the end, when Ricciardo's engine blew up, Verstappen got onto the radio to his team and said, "Listen, yeah, if there's a check the engine out. If you see any issues, turn my engine down."
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the team is not allowed to mess with the car. It has to be driver driven.
Yes.
And the driver has to, you know, change the settings inside the car. But the team can tell him, "Listen, yeah, turn this knob to that position," and you know, whatever the case may be. So, very mature approach to say to the team, "I will rather come second than not be in this race."
Absolutely. Sure. I mean, I saw Lewis. I mean, you know, George, you say that. I thought the team, you know, behind the scenes can tweak, and because you hear the drivers and you know, chatting to the team boss. I mean, I heard Lewis say it twice. Once was when they cocked up and they put the wrong tires on the vehicle. Mm. And then there was another incident. I don't know what happened, but he was just like, "God, I'm not getting the same lap speeds as I was or as the other guy." So. Yeah. Find the problem and tell me what button to push so I can sort
exactly,
it out.
Exactly right. He was doing 120 to 121, 1 minute 21 seconds a lap, whereas everyone else was doing 119, 120.
Yeah.
So he was a second a lap behind everyone else. Now, his tires played a massive part in that, but at the end of the day, you're right. You know, he doesn't know what's wrong with the car because he doesn't have all those charts and graphs and data, whereas the team are sitting looking at that stuff, and the team can say, you know, turn setting X to Y and Z, and you know, you'll get a better performance. And he was getting frustrated, saying, "Listen, yeah, even with new tires on the car, I'm still not getting the lap times that everyone else is getting.
The problem.
Blipping fix this thing.
sort it out, guys." And obviously, I mean, he's not going to stop now. I mean, he's just going to absolutely try and hammer it home.
Well, five times world champion. He's got a little way to go to get to Schumacher.
Schumacher's seven, huh?
Yeah. So he's got a little way to go to get to Schumacher. I mean, yesterday. You know, I love the Brits to death, but they effectively said that he is the greatest Formula One driver ever to have existed. Just beat Fangio. And I sat there in front of the TV and I said, "Martin Brundle, you freaking moron."
Yeah.
He's not. Schumacher still is.
Absolutely. Until he breaks that record. Yes. And I saw they interviewed Alan Prost afterwards, and Alan Prost was like, in his era, he's the best.
Yes,
but it doesn't make him the best. It's
not
overall.
Of all time.
And I also, I believe Schumacher used or needed fewer Grand Prix races to actually get.
To achieve.
Yes.
Back in the day when Ferrari were good.
True.
Yeah.
Because they had the right driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, do you see Schumacher's son is...
He's coming through the ranks now.
Yeah,
isn't
Mickey
he?
Schumacher. Yeah. So he's coming through the ranks. He's currently, I think, in Formula 2.
Mm-hmm.
Or Formula 3, and he's coming through the ranks at the moment, and they're trying to keep him out of the limelight.
Oh, I'm sure because of everything that's happened.
Yeah,
because
one of two things could happen, you know, either, and this is the danger of being a Schumacher, is either he's going to get too much pressure and fail, or he's going to get too little support because he's a Schumacher and fail. Hopefully, the middle ground is there.
Well, I mean, let's be completely honest, Jan. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to work this out. If he enters Formula 1, everybody is going to be asking the question, is he as good or can he be as good as his dad? He carries a massive mantle. You know, just with the name that's associated to him. And hats off if he does make it. The fact that he does, who knows, maybe that will be something that we can all watch in the future.
But don't don't underestimate Verstappen. As much as he is, you know, Verkrashen, he's. I reckon he's the next number one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's building a good foundation, isn't he? Yeah. He's got a lot of experience. He's crashed a lot. Yeah. He knows how to handle those kind of situations.
Hopefully, Mick Schumacher comes and gives him a run for his money.
All right, fantastic. Last key story for the morning, and it's not one that we like to talk about, but you know, this is a growing concern, and we've spoken about it you know, a number of times, but you know, right in the midst of transport month, 28 people were killed in a horrific multi-vehicle crash on the N1 between Mokofong and Modimolle in Limpopo. That N1 stretch, you know, driving north, is horrendous. And you know, our transport minister Bladen Zamandi, he launched an event in Johannesburg during which he took a ride and had first-hand experience in public transport operations, and hinted that the services were pathetic and required serious intervention and improvement. I know that you don't have to get into a taxi when you look at some of them to know that the service is not what it should be. And you know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to do that. But we cannot continue to just turn a blind eye to the fatalities that are happening on some of our most dangerous roads. And you know, people say dangerous roads. I don't think you get a dangerous road. And if you do, then you need to be mature enough to drive properly on the damn thing. I don't think
we have dangerous roads.
Yeah, cars don't crash themselves.
Yeah, we've got dangerous operators of cars.
Yes.
That's all vehicles. Yeah. That's what we've got.
So the problem is, A, in the chair, it's the person behind the wheel, and then B is the quality of the vehicle that they're driving, whether it's roadworthy or not.
It goes back to the person behind the wheel.
And that goes back to the person behind the wheel or the operator.
The weakest thing in a car is the nut behind the steering wheel.
Yep. Absolutely. You know, these guys are going on about poor traffic.
You're full of them today, I see.
there is poor traffic policing, visibility, and lack of, you know, roadblocks is cause for concern. But, you know, a roadblock, yes, traffic's going to slow down. You're going to get through it. They're going to check your license. You've got a driver's license. Fantastic. It doesn't stop that tool driving like an idiot, overtaking on a solid white line. I see it every single morning to come, you know, coming to work, where guys just blatantly have a disregard for any other user on the road. And it's, I don't know what anybody is going to do, but you know, other than everybody getting a dash cam where you can actually get fined if a fellow road user finds you doing something wrong, send that to the authorities. I mean, how do we police this? How do we stop these guys from doing stupid things? I mean, overtaking on a blind rise. I mean, do you have rocks in your head?
Take the money that is being charged for the fuel levy, which is so freaking high, and pay that to our decent policemen, and do the thing that we've been banging on about for the last 2 to 3 years, visible policing, and have the penalties high.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that doesn't mean sitting behind a bush or a bridge with a speed camera.
No.
Get them out on the road and get these people committing all these rolling infractions.
Yeah, I mean, we took a drive out to Horobiersport yesterday, not to the dam side, to the other side. And I must say, I saw 5 or 6 sections of road where there were cops doing just random checks. And you do tend to drive a little bit more cautiously
when you see
you know that there are cops on the road. And you know, even if they, I mean, you know, these guys nowadays, they just put up a sign, high accident zone, you know. Thanks. That really helps me a hell of a lot. You know, if I don't see the sign, is the person behind me, you know, driving properly, or they're still driving like, you know, like idiots? And it feels like I'm bitching and moaning, but I am bitching and moaning because I just don't see the point in losing lives because of traffic.
This is the Tyron Rant
session. Tyron Woods Rant.
This is actually a scary thing. 14,000 fatal road accidents a year.
That's accidents. That's not that the number of people
the
in your cars.
300 billion rand.
Exactly. So, you know, for 300 billion rand, and I mean, you know, there was this accident that 28 people died in. That's one accident.
That's one.
And the guys have been asking for a barrier on that N1 to split the obviously the left-hand side of the road and the right for the last 5 years. You know, an accident like this happens, everyone goes, oh, we need visible policing. We need to do this. We need to do that. Let's make everybody happy because it's lip service.
It could have been prevented by a barrier.
Absolutely. Lip service for the last 5 years, and these guys are still asking for barriers. It's shocking. I mean, and it's a, I mean, we lose as many people in road accidents as we do to AIDS, and you know.
Well, you know, Africa, it tops the list for the number of road fatalities per capita. You know, which I'm looking for where South Africa fits into that list.
But I mean, what a lovely record to have and put your hand up and go, oh yeah, we're the best at doing that. What, killing our people on the roads because we don't actually care about them.
So South Africa has a per capita road death of 134 fatalities per 100,000 motor vehicles.
That
is. So you can't do per inhabitant because I think per inhabitant is a good stat, but per 100,000 vehicles, which means that, and guess who tops the list? Guinea.
Really?
9,462 fatalities per 100,000 vehicles.
All right. So that's not a holiday destination.
So we, you know, we while it's not acceptable and we got to do something about it, you know, there are a lot of countries that are way ahead of us, the wrong thing.
But then let's be the country that puts our hands up and goes, let's turn this around, guys. Let's drop that deficit by, let's try and do half by implementing, you know, barriers and visible policing, and rather be, you know, the country that's in the news for, oh my gosh, have you seen how South Africa turned around their road fatalities stats and numbers?
We need educated drivers more than anything else.
True, but you know what, Martin, like, you say educated drivers, how do these guys, when you do your driver's license, you know that you cannot overtake on a solid white line, yet people do it. They've got driver's licenses, so maybe you should, you know,
why do people do something? Because they can.
Yeah,
because they get away with it.
And because they get away with it.
Visible policing.
Absolutely. Mm. That's my rant for the morning. I'm terribly sorry. Martin, let's talk about the Mercedes, the A-Class, the A200. And let's talk about something positive because this looks like an absolutely beautiful machine. I think Merck are making amazing cars. They are such sexy vehicles. And you've been driving this one for, what, a couple of days? A week now.
Well, it's actually, I gave it back. I returned it on Friday.
Did you cry?
No, not really.
Okay, all right. Well, tell us about it.
Let me be upfront. The previous A-Class was one of my least favorite cars.
Which A is this?
A200. I always felt that the last A-Class was a bit underdone. It ticked most of the right boxes, but the whole experience didn't quite gel. So when this one fell in my lap, I fell into this one's driver's seat.
I think
where the A-Class started off years ago.
Ooh, yes, like the very first generation.
Looked like a Bredton, honestly. This one looks much, much better.
But the previous generation already, it was a great-looking car. I have to end it.
The Brenton.
No. You're talking about the first two gens.
Yes.
There was one in between now as well.
Okay.
The thing is, the last one looked great, but it was actually not that great a car. In fact, I went on record as saying, why didn't Mercedes just buy a Golf, strip it to see what make it work and copy it?
Yeah.
But the new one is actually a very good vehicle in its own right. They sorted out the niggling issues with the suspension setup and with the steering setup and with the ride quality and space utilization, and everything is vastly, vastly improved here. Now, this A200, the days of Mercedes model names actually corresponding to the actual engine is long gone. Yeah. Those days are gone. This one has a 1.3-liter turbo engine, turbo petrol. Good 420 kilowatts, and that gets sent to the front wheels through a 7-speed twin-clutch gearbox, which this time around, again, was programmed by someone with a driver's license. That's another nice improvement. Now, the previous one was, it was a bit lumpy.
Yeah.
This one is as much at home on the open road as it is around town.
Okay.
The thing that impressed me most, fuel consumption. Now, I drove it in Cape Town for a week. We all know what Cape Town traffic looks like. And this poor car got stuck in traffic on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I gave it back with a true average consumption of 6.3 litres per 100.
Okay, so wow, geez, like, and that's town and that's, traffic driving.
Yes, and remember it was 40-odd degrees in Cape Town most of last week. Yeah. So the aircon was blowing full blast.
Yeah.
I was not trying to save fuel, and yet it performed brilliantly in that respect as well. Enough power to overtake, enough power for traffic or to take a quick little gap or anything. It's also very well made, and this one was loaded with options.
How much rands worth of options?
160,000 rands worth of options.
Jeez,
so that's quite a lot on a car which with the basic retail price of 500,000.
Jeez,
Lock. Bumped it up to 660.
Yeah, that's 20 to 25%. Was that fully loaded?
No, no, no. There's still more you can add. Okay. There's still more you can add. But this one of the highlights was the adaptive multi-beam LED headlights. Now, LED headlights, it's like my technological innovation of the decade.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that could have happened to cars. And this one is even smarter. It uses multiple beams to identify various things on the road.
Yeah.
It keeps the road and the surroundings illuminated to where you need to be without blinding any oncoming traffic. Not once did anyone flash, and yet I never had an issue to see where I was supposed to go.
Without the brights on, obviously.
No. Look, it switches by itself.
Oh, really?
It switches on different segments of the lights, and it aims them individually as well. I mean, when you turn it on, it looks like a little disco in front of the car.
Oh, wow.
It makes the swiping movement as the lights turn on. So that really impressed me very much. There's another function which I think needs a little bit more work,
but
it could become really useful. The cruise control can read speed signs or traffic signs.
Oh, wow.
So you tap the reset or resume button on the cruise control, tap it upwards, and it checks on the GPS or around you through a whole array of cameras, and it sets your cruise control to that level. Now, all they need to do now from this point is to keep it adapting to changing speed limits, and it'll be perfect. I mean, you can literally, in that case, you'd be able to set the car and it will follow whatever the road signs say.
That's amazing. It really, really is.
And then they have a brilliant head-up display. Again, an option, unfortunately. Three segments in this head-up display. It's visible whatever the light conditions. You can use it for or to project navigation settings or anything of that sort, as well as speed, consumption, you name it. You can basically configure it the way you want it. And I think that's a big thing with this new A-Class. I actually talked to the car. You're driving along and you'd say, "Hey, Mercedes." We've all seen those ads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a Mercedes, and you can just about access any function on this car through that. And the nice thing is the car listens and it understands what you want to do.
That's great. And I think the trouble is the car manufacturers are trying to build their own software, which is good.
Mm.
I would rather get in my car and have the car connect to my phone.
Mm.
And use the phone's voice-activated system and be able to integrate, because then you've got a seamless experience between what you hold in your device in your pocket, your computer, and the car itself.
I mean, does Siri get jealous when you speak to Mercedes?
No, but if I connect via the standard Apple CarPlay,
does it have CarPlay?
Exactly that, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that's great.
But I think to your point, though, like,
why put all this investment into software when
it's all in there already?
One stupid reason. You can do things like changing the car's ambient lighting settings. You can change the color of the ambient lighting or the dashboard display.
Build an app that goes on a phone that uses Siri to do the same thing. You know, because then you could potentially make changes and setting changes to your car when you're not even in it.
Shame. You're stealing this. You're stealing this. The thunder of this very nice Mercedes with the system that finally actually really works.
Fair enough. But I've just got a bugbear with manufacturers that are, you know.
Do you think it's a case of like recreating the wheel instead of just integrating?
Yes.
Because we're so attached to our phones. Our phones are not going anywhere. I think folks would get rid of their cars before they get rid of their phones.
Even Tesla, but Tesla has an app. So you know, maybe Mercedes-Benz can do the same.
Mercedes-Benz has an app, actually.
Okay.
Which, among other things, allows you to access your car through near-field communication from your phone.
Ah, brilliant.
So if you just have your phone in your pocket, and you walk up to the car and it senses you're close.
Well, there we go. Maybe and it's not unlocks, as bad as I think.
Yeah. No, it's actually much better than you think.
So all in all, I mean, a good vehicle?
A very good vehicle. I'm really impressed with the strides. I think from being slightly subpar, it's in some respects move to the head of the class now.
Okay.
To beat the Audi A3 at its own game, that takes some doing, and I think they've actually succeeded.
Oh, well, good on them.
And also, it's a very good looking car. Driving through Seapoint at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
How many boys looked at you?
Everyone. No, seriously, I actually had people stop next to the road, to rip out their phones and take photos of this white Atlas.
Don, it was you, the driver, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm telling you now.
Of course.
No, I'm not pretty enough for Seaport, man.
But okay, so Mart, so all in all, thanks very much for
all
that.
All in all,
and your
very
review,
nice car.
The review is up on... it's going up today.
It will go up today.
Fantastic. So if you want to check that out and see a little bit more about that, Martin's article will be on our news and review section on our site. George, I've been seeing a lot of... I mean, Elon Musk is always in the news. I think the naysayers are always naysaying, but he's revealed something new. Well, he's going to reveal something new in December, and this thing's called a Hyperloop, and he's going to offer free rides to consumers. So, Elon Musk's Hyperloop ultra high speed transport system will be unveiled in Los Angeles in early December with free test rides for the public. The entrepreneur announced, and I read the article, but essentially what he's saying is he can count down a 6-hour trip. So if we had this Hyperloop in South Africa, we could get to Durban from Johannesburg in about 35 minutes.
Yeah, so I mean, this Hyperloop's been on the cards for a couple of years already.
Yes.
And it's a brilliant concept. So I mean, just in a nutshell, what it does is it uses the combination of magnetism. Yeah. So if you think about how magnets work
when they repel each other.
So I mean, it's a complex piece of equipment. Yep. Where the magnets repel each other, not just by putting one opposite to the other on the track. There's actually the way in which they configure these magnets. Yeah. that get that hover effect.
Yes.
So that's the one thing. And then the other thing is they create a slight vacuum in this tunnel.
Which amazes me, because then you're taking away
air resistance. And then this thing can travel at unbelievable speeds.
Yeah.
So I hope it works. I mean,
And I see Richard Branson also is involved in space travel. He's backing a Virgin Hyperloop as well, which one has been tested in Nevada. So I mean, these are, do you think they're going to just put these pipes underground and they're going to each own different routes? This is not like this is probably only going to be for the rich and famous. I don't know if this is going to be something that, I mean, in years to come, you know, these guys are obviously doing this. You know, I don't know if it's a competition to see who can do it first, but I just think it would be better if they were doing it together. Can you imagine Musk and Branson JV?
Competition is good, because competition, drives innovation.
Sure.
So I think the competition's good. At some point, the networks will overlap at some, look at Vodacom, MTN.
Yeah.
They now use the same infrastructure, and it's more about, the stuff they can charge across that infrastructure.
Yeah.
So the infrastructure is one thing which they're both going head to head at. But at some point, you're right. Why not just make one infrastructure?
Yeah.
And have your products within that infrastructure.
Absolutely. I suppose that would be like, it would be like airspace, wouldn't it? So you can choose the different kind of planes or the different kind of train or what you want to ride on. But the tunnel system itself is something that they all in partnership.
This will never be for the mass market, though, unfortunately.
Maybe one day.
I mean, I suppose you could have said that about the London Underground
and the Gautrain. I think a lot of people are still using it. I mean, see, they're about to roll out now.
Gautrain's become for rich people.
The next
wave, 183 bucks from Pretoria to Oval Tambo. Yeah, that's a bit wide.
We're still waiting for them to extend it to the south.
Yeah, we'll see.
It'll come
one
maybe
day.
Maybe they'll do a Hyperloop.
Hyperloop to the deep south.
60, oh, look, but
60 seconds to the south.
At the very least, this rich boy experiment between Branson and Musk, at least I think humanity will learn something there.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll learn something and we'll get some infrastructure.
Exactly, it's the future of travel, isn't it? All right. And then one last story, guys. I see there's a driverless hover taxi which is taking off in Singapore. So test flights of a driverless hover taxi will take place in Singapore next year, the back end of next year. A German aviation firm has said this is the latest innovation to offer an escape from Asia's monster traffic jam. Long story short, guys are going to start commuting in these drone-type helicopters because travel on the ground.
So back to Martin's one-liner. So now we've got to get into a taxi with a stranger. What was your line?
So you got to download the app.
You're going to meet. You go on the internet to meet a stranger to come pick you up in his car.
Yeah. So now you go onto the internet to meet a stranger that you can't see, to get into his helicopter to fly 300 feet in the sky.
Yeah.
But I mean,
what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
Well, this is, you know, this is the thing, and the thing is with these helicopters, they obviously piloted. There's a pilot that can sit in the. It's called a volocopter. Hmm. Can sit in this volocopter and drive you. Or I think where it's going to go to is there's going to be a control room, and you're not even going to see the driver. This thing's going to be standing empty. You're going to get in, and James back at HQ is going to go
a transportation pod.
Yeah, but I think that's a little bit risky, because if James is not having a good day, I don't know if I want to be getting into James's volocopter. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry, guys. I'll get you there safely.
Only thing I wonder about with these, like this volocopter.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be electric. Batteries are heavy. Heavy things don't really want to fly. How do they do that? How do they power it?
Well, I mean, it's relative, hey? So if a drone can fly, you've just got to put enough propellers and enough lift. And
all of that takes power, which needs more battery.
Yeah, but it's fine. It's relative. It's relative to the weight. So, you know, enough propellers, big enough propellers, and you'll lift that battery.
All right. Well, we'll see.
You know, the one thing I'm skeptical about is how far it can fly.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I'm skeptical about.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that.
Because, you know, at the moment, flying with an electric aeroplane, there's some flying schools in America that use electric aeroplanes for their flying schools, fixed-wing aeroplanes, and they can fly for an hour or two.
All right,
and then the battery's got to be
so this
charged.
Electric air taxi takes off and lands vertically, and it's obviously based on drone technology. It can fly two people for around 30 kilometers, so 19 miles, which is not very far, but you know, it's there.
Which brings us back to George's point:
How long? I don't think it's very long.
No. I don't think so either. Well, anyway, gentlemen, on that note, thanks for everybody for tuning into Auto Central this morning. You can follow us on all of our social media platforms, and we look forward to listening or hosting you guys in 2 weeks' time. And until then,
safe motoring.
Safe motoring.
This is CliffCentral.com.